thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All I do.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3. The sun is shining. We're overlooking pretty downtown Chicago today. Hope you get a chance to enjoy it, although I must confess, walking to the train today smelled a little like fall to me. We are here today until 3 o'clock. A little after 1:30, we'll visit with a researcher from the Mayo Clinic about whether or not excessive use of a cell phone gives you an increased risk of cancer. Bill Leff feels strongly that that's causal. Producer Elif is worried about that. Somebody else was in the mix with us the other day, Elif. I'm trying to remember who it was and felt like that as well. But others say, yeah, not so much. You know, the thing is, saying, yeah, not so much, and there's no evidence to prove that, doesn't mean that it's not happening, and the people that are worried about it will be the ones that get the last laugh. So I want to be open to that. But what does the research say anyway, doctor, after 1:30? So do you know what these names all have in common? Frida, Annette, Aline, Mickey, Aline, Sharon, Julie, Sean. Anyone? Do you guys know what those names have in common?
Two Alines?
Yeah, Aline's in there twice. Frida, Annette, Aline, Mickey, Aline, Sharon, Julie, Sean. I could go on, but let's stop there. All of them have been married to Larry King.
Oh, yeah, the married twice.
Yeah, he married one. Well, at one time he got he's been married 8 times, 9 if you include a previous annulment. When he first got married, the parents, he was only 18. The parents of both of them didn't approve it, and they made them get the marriage annulled. He got married first in 1952. He got married again in 1961. He usually stays married for around 3 or 4 years. And the latest divorce comes on the heels of his surviving a heart attack at the age of 85. And he heard that his wife, Sean, may have been manipulating some real estate documents to make sure she gets the real estate. He was very upset about that. Now he wants to get a divorce. Hello. Larry King is ridiculous. But I'm sorry. I'm sad that he's ridiculous. Because when I was growing up as a broadcaster, nobody was better than Larry King. And I read his book. I even think I interviewed him once or twice. And that doesn't have anything to do with my opinion about him. I just thought he was really good at his craft. Since then, you've come to know him as that weird-looking guy with suspenders who used to do a show on CNN, and now he does infomercials, and he just won't quit. So he's become sort of a mockery of himself. And he's always got these tall, beautiful, blonde-haired wives. One of them was a Playboy money. Sean is 58. He's 85, the woman from whom he is now getting his latest divorce. But they're always of a type. And, you know, you get to do whatever you want to do, Larry King. But I'm just sorry that your legacy is going to be all of that and not a pioneer in talk radio or a guy who did some great things on CNN once upon a time. And he was always weird. He kissed Marlon Brando, for crying out loud. He just had weird likes and dislikes and things. He was a great staunch supporter of Frank Sinatra, for instance. I just remember watching and listening to him as his career evolved. And now we're here. Larry, you're ridiculous, Larry King.
Okay, that kind of reminds me of Taylor Swift. So she just keeps dating these boyfriends, and that's kind of part of her brand now, whether it's voluntary or not. And she's a singer with a voice, and I recognize that I'm not saying she has a nice voice. She's a singer with a voice who plays instruments, who a lot of people love, but it's all about those boyfriends.
Oh, the fact that her brand, to me, is the angry girlfriend is tiresome. And I like everything about her. She's super talented. She's super smart. She's going to win on this copyright thing in the long run. I mean, what's not to be impressed by or like about Taylor Swift, except her whole vibe is somebody did me wrong. Those haters are going to hate. Wouldn't you, for 10 minutes in your life, want to have 1 minute of her life? I mean, or something like that. Wouldn't you?
Travel.
Really, is it that bad for you, Taylor? Imagine what your life would be like if it really sucked. Oh, my gosh, would you be singing then? But it's always somebody done her wrong, and I don't understand that.
We'll get to that later.
I'll tell you what's really got people upset, though, in the world of absurdity is that Sean Spicer's going to be on Dancing with the Stars. Elif, I just dropped in our queue him on Fox and Friends. Maybe you can find that. But Sean is going to be on Dancing with the Stars for season 28. We just mentioned this on the stream yesterday. The cast is going to include the Supremes, Mary Wilson. Is it Karamo Brown? The Bachelorette's Hannah Brown?
Karamo.
Who is Karamo Brown? What does she do?
That's a man.
Sorry, Karamo.
He deals with culture in Queer Eye.
Oh, he's one of the Queer Eye guys?
Yeah.
Supermodel Christy Brinkley, country star Lauren Elena, James Vanderbeek, the actor, NFL legend Ray Lewis. You know that your list is controversial when Ray Lewis is not the controversial person on it. The Office star Kate Flannery. That'll be funny. Pop star Ally Brooke, Lamar Odom, a Kardashian of sorts, is back in there. Kim Kardashian danced on Dancing with the Stars, and I thought Kanye West did, but I can't find evidence of that. And now former press secretary Sean Spicer. And guess what? The world is ticked. Our news click at WGNradio.com says you're more likely, less likely, or as likely to watch Dancing with the Stars because of Sean Spicer. Here's my prediction, though. That however badly he does, and he did dance on Fox and Friends to sort of, you know, promote his appearance. He did an interview. Well, here's part of the interview. This is him on Fox and Friends talking about how his being on the show shouldn't be seen as divisive.
You know what? It's going to be fun. It's the kind of entertainment that I could actually encourage my kids and family to watch.
Right.
It's what we need more of, which is good, wholesome entertainment.
Mo Ryan, the really astute TV critic from Chicago, is really upset about this. She said, way to launder. Oh, what was the word she used? You know, she took issue. She doesn't like Sean Spicer. And her point was that ABC is laundering his sins on this feel-good All-American show. The show shouldn't need Sean Spicer. But as we pointed out yesterday on the stream, the show has often had these reclamation projects. There have been people who have come on the show in the past who, you know, at that moment we don't really like. Two Palins have been on the show. Rick Perry has been on the show. Nancy Kerrigan has been on the show. Tanya Harding has been on the show. People who you go, oh, I don't know about them. And then you, Paula Deen, the disgraced, if you will, TV cook, book, show hostess and author. All of them had sins that they wish they could be forgiven for, and that show is very good about doing that. So Sean Spicer is going to get his turn, and Mo doesn't want ABC to afford him that. And maybe you don't either. Maybe we'll all be surprised and we'll end up liking the guy. But that's what, and I'm telling you, I tried to introduce this topic to the Mincing Rascals, and they just didn't seem to be that interested when we did the podcast today.
I felt badly for you a little bit.
Yeah, I threw all of these things out there, and you just looked at me so dismissively, Steve Bertrand.
It wasn't just me.
Well, I got that going for me. Shame on me for accusing you of it, when in fact all of them looked at me dismissively. Hey, Larry, you're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, didn't they have Snoop Dogg on Dancing with the Stars at one time?
You know, I 28 seasons, I went through every season yesterday and took notes on the ones that I thought were hot-button guests. And I don't know why people get all upset.
They can either watch it or they don't have to watch it, you know, just because somebody's on there that they don't like or they like. You know, it's a choice. Watch it or don't watch it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, before you go, Larry?
Yeah.
Or as we like to say, Larry. Are you going to more likely, less likely, or as likely to watch it?
I'll watch bits and pieces of it. My wife watches it all the time, though.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Larry.
You're welcome. Bye.
Have a good day. That's a thing. It is that. It's the most harmless, fun-to-watch, pretty show. Tom Bergeron, the host, is hilarious. Aaron Andrews does a real nice job. It's just a really well-crafted piece of All-American entertainment. And as Bergeron said in his statement yesterday, it's a way for us to escape. So Bergeron sits down with the new producer, he minds you. It has a new producer. And he said, I thought we were of a mind when the lunch was over that we don't want to upset anybody. And then he turns on the TV and finds out that Sean Spicer is one of the dancers. So Bergeron virtually apologized and distanced himself from it and said, it wasn't my call, but I'm still going to do the show.
But it sounds like every season has a black sheep. So why would he be, though he just didn't want the black sheep to come from politics?
Well, it has before. I mean, Rick Perry, Tom DeLay, Bristol Palin. Who wasn't a politician, but was there because of her mother's fame. But none of them, if those are black sheep, Steve, I think none of them so black as Sean Spicer. I don't think anybody has a lower Q score, if you will, that's been on that show than Sean Spicer.
Paula,
or has been more divisive.
Paula, what's her name?
Dean?
Paula Dean was pretty much revealed as a racist.
Yeah, right.
So I don't think she would never be on the show in this day. She, 5 years ago, yes, but today, no. Right?
Well, Sean Spicer, who do you think is a more controversial choice?
I'm saying today, if Paula, what Paula Dean was to have been, if those statements were revealed today, it'd be more damning to her than they were when they were, what, 5 or 6 years ago?
I guess so. And really, if maybe so. I'm hearing you. Because I'm trying to think of really what is the sin that Sean Spicer did. Pretty much everything Spicer did, Mo Ryan, for instance, said, this is a guy that's been lying to us. He was doing the work of the presidency.
He's still lying to us.
You and I have had this argument for 3 years now. I'm not sure what a Sean Spicer is supposed to do. If he says, oh, I don't agree with what the president just said, then they're just going to get somebody else to do it. Isn't the cause of a presidential spokesperson to make as palatable as possible the thoughts and ideas of the president? And if you just walk away, they're going to get some other sycophant to do it.
That's the question then, is then you should walk away. If you don't want to lie to the American people, do you think that's the wrong thing to do? Look, I don't know what I would do. I'm not, you know, I'm not in that position. But if you are being told to go out there and lie to the American people, then you do have a decision to make. And I don't know if he ever was told that. You know, I don't know exactly what specifics we're looking at here.
Right, because in his book, he says he never did, he never lied. He never lied. He never said something that he knew not to be true when he said it. That's the definition of a lie. And I've read the book cover to cover. In fact, I just took it on my last vacation. Sean and I went to France, and he said that he's never knowingly told you anything that he did not believe to be the truth. And by the way, here's the question, though. This is the moral conundrum. If you are saying something that the president believes, even though you may not believe it, your job is to relay the president's thoughts and ideas. So are you therefore lying? I didn't say I think that. I said this is what the president believes. That's what Sean Spicer did. Anyway, are you more likely, less likely, or as likely to watch the show now? I don't know. Lafka, do you watch Dancing with the Stars? I don't think you do.
Nah.
So you're probably as likely, which is not very likely. But you're not less likely. You weren't going to watch it anyway.
No, I mean, if a clip comes up of him falling on his face because it's funny, I might watch that. But, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to sit for 2 hours, apparently, to watch it.
Yeah, that was the big revelation to you yesterday. 2 hours? Are you kidding? Yeah, that's what happens.
I can't even imagine.
Have you watched the final episode of... you know, any of these shows where the big reveal is who does The Bachelor get or who gets kicked off the island, it's always a 2 hour nothing.
I mean, a 2 hour movie alone is an investment for me. I can't imagine a TV show that's like subpar.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So, you know, I said something yesterday that I regretted, and then the more I thought of it, the more I really wondered what's true. I mean, who is the audience for the show? You know, are they going to be people who are going to applaud Sean Spicer or, you know, not like Sean Spicer?
I think that's a good question. I think it's a pretty broad swath of Americana. You know, it's Republicans, it's Democrats, it's country folks, it's city folks. But here's my prediction. He's going to do really well on the show. He's not a great dancer. He says he's a terrible dancer. And judging by what he did on TV today, he's average. He's just a guy that doesn't dance. He can learn. But is he going to win? No, but he's going to do much better than he would were it not for people rooting for Sean Spicer. Right. So the people that are on Team Trump are absolutely going to push Sean Spicer forward. That happens all the time.
So you vote?
Yeah, God, are you guys just finding out about this?
I'm not interested in it.
It's so, yeah, so you call in and you vote. And so somebody who's really good will eventually get kicked off, and Spicer will still be on because people are
rooting for Sean. It's a popularity contest.
That's what it is.
And see, I don't like that.
Well, don't watch, Lauren.
Okay, we're good then.
Somebody asked, what about Ray Lewis? He, John, he murdered someone. I know, we're not even talking about that. Technically, he didn't. Ray Lewis was with a couple of buddies at a nightclub.
Well, you're just saying, you're saying technically Sean Spicer didn't lie.
Well, I'll tell you the Ray Lewis story. He was with some pals. It was after a game or some damn thing.
I think it might have been the Super Bowl, wasn't
it? They got into an argument with a guy, and outside the club, the guy got stabbed to death, and Ray and his two pals were charged. He eventually flipped and gave evidence against the other two, and he was charged with something like obstruction of justice. So that's Ray Lewis, and now he's on Dancing with the Stars. And I don't know if he was involved in the actual murder of that guy or not, but that's the way the story went. And he's not the controversy today. Professor, you're on WGN Radio. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here, John. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's my setup. What do you want to say, having heard what I just said?
This is an area of tremendous controversy. It makes most of us unsettled. But I would just refer our listeners to two websites. One is simply the National Cancer Institute, and then simply type in cell phones and cancer risk. And the other URL would be mayoclinic.org, and in the search function, simply put in cell phones. And I think one can see, as you mentioned, that the weight of evidence, the preponderance of studies, does not show any compelling relationship between cancer, especially brain tumors, and cell phone usages. However, I think we have to recognize that sometimes we may be exposed to an agent, and 50 years later, there may be an adverse effect. And I'm thinking in particular of asbestos exposure, that individuals exposed to that agent may be incubating a cancer for 50 years before it becomes evident. So I think we need to be prudent. We need to be inquisitive. But right now, no compelling or convincing evidence that our cell phones will cause cancer.
I have lots of questions for you, and our listeners do too. We'll take them as they come in. 312-981-7200. Brett, what's your question? You're on the air.
I'm so glad you brought this up again after yesterday, John, and listening to your podcast last night. I don't see any difference, really, in as you guys were debating yesterday on holding the phone up to your ear. I don't see a difference in the severity of holding the phone up to your ear, carrying it around in your pocket, or having a Bluetooth headset in. I think they're all probably varying degrees of bad, but I don't think that we're going to know the effect of this for years and years, akin to what you had just brought up with the fact of what the smoking and all of this other stuff that has come out after years and years of that study. So I would imagine on some level it's probably all bad, but I don't know what level that's going to be. We're probably 20 years out from knowing that, right?
Well, let's let him respond. Thank you, Brett. Doctor?
Oh, I think that's a very insightful comment, that I think at some level it's probably all bad. What that level is, we don't know. And whether we Bluetooth it, have it in our back pocket, or within our ear canal, at some point there may be that definitive study. But right now, the preponderance of work from reputable investigators really does not compellingly show a direct relationship.
But do you realize how you've just now changed my attitude? Your first statements and mine made it sound like this is silly, we don't need to worry. And you just now affirmed his concern that down the road we may find out that it is cancer causing, and you just said it's all bad. It's just a measure of how much. So which is it?
I think it's exactly like being exposed to radiation for a chest X-ray or a CAT scan. I think there is a critical level that experts state is bad, but we don't really know what that threshold is. And I think we just have to be patient, stand the test of time. But as of this afternoon, I think the data simply are not there that we are at risk for a brain tumor from a cell phone.
Are you on a landline right now or a cell?
Yes. Landline, yes.
Do you make that decision on occasion? Do you worry about that yourself?
No. This is simply a matter of convenience, John. And I never choose one instrument over another based on the concern of getting a brain tumor.
You're not 15 years old, though. So imagine that you're... You know why I say that? Because because imagine you have another 80 years of potential use of that device next to your skull, and the tissue is still evolving at 15. So I wonder if that's a different concern.
Absolutely. We don't know definitively the effect of the radio frequency particles on the developing brain. And it's an area that makes us all uneasy, because throughout medicine, many times we have been incorrect in our recommendations. Although realistically, the greatest health threat from the cell phone is distracted driving rather than the risk of a brain tumor.
Well, here's my understanding too, Doctor, that the way a microwave oven works is it doesn't get warm in there, but the food does, because it's radiated by those waves. And
yes,
that's what you are doing to your head, but it's such a low level that while the phone or maybe your ear might get warm, it's not enough to raise your body temperature. Is that all true, what I just said?
Yes, I think that's a superb analysis of an incredibly complex situation. And I have some uneasiness, because throughout history, experts have weighed in and have assured us that X, Y, or Z is safe and effective, when in fact we now know X, Y, and Z was not safe and not effective.
Here's some more texts. What if you carry your phone in your bra like some people do?
I'm smiling, and I don't think I'll weigh in on that one.
Well, I suppose the concern is brain cancer versus breast cancer, and you are probably going to tell me that there's no evidence to suggest it will increase your chance of breast cancer.
I think that's true, John. I think sometimes these urban myths go viral. They achieve a life of their own, but I think our listeners can be reassured that positioning a cell phone over the area of the breast, I cannot conceive that there is any reasonable risk of breast cancer from that intervention.
Well, then why? Here's another text, 773. Our daughter is a nurse at a prominent Chicago hospital.
Yes.
Pregnant nurses are advised not to store their work cell phones in their pockets while working, presumably because maybe the radiation off the phone will affect the fetus. I don't know what that's all about. Do you have any thoughts about that?
No. I guess I would challenge the author of that recommendation to share the data supporting that recommendation. Obviously, the developing fetus is profoundly sensitive to changes in the environment, but I would be curious to know the background of that recommendation.
I'm just looking at this long study from the, is this the CDC or NCILF? But it's one of those major organizations that we trust do research. And they just go over study after study, some of them involving, you know, several hundred thousand people over years to see if they are more likely to get cancer or not.
Yes.
And they don't. The World Health Organization classified cell phone use is possibly carcinogenic to humans. This would be an outlier. I'm just going to read you this sentence. A component of the World Health Organization classified cell phone use as possibly carcinogenic to humans. The findings could not be dismissed as reflecting bias alone, and
yes,
the causal interpretation could not be excluded. That was in answer to the question, what have the expert organizations said about the cancer risk? But in the meantime, the CDC, the FDA, the FCC, none of them, European studies, none of them could find a causal relationship. I wonder about this WHO study and why they're saying that.
And again, John, I think any of us can hone in on one particular body of work, but the weight of evidence, the drift of these studies do not show causality. And another issue would be many of us have scans for problems that would never have been scanned a generation ago. Our grandparents, if they had a headache, they were advised to take some aspirin and take a nap. Today, in a major metropolitan area, we might wind up with an MRI scan. So earlier diagnosis and technology may be a factor in distorting these numbers.
Do we see more brain cancer these days? Perhaps for that reason, but is there a higher incidence reported of brain cancer?
The answer would be no, John.
Really?
Now, these cancers are relatively infrequent. And anyone with a cancer called a glioma,
right,
or an acoustic neuroma undoubtedly would be referred to a tertiary center, much as you are blessed to have in Chicago or the Mayo Clinic. And there are analyses by the American Cancer Society showing cancer trends. And there really has been no blip showing an explosive occurrence of these very rare cancers.
You would be hard-pressed to convince some people of that, by the way. It's 151 on WGN. Not doubting your word, I'm just telling you, some people anecdotally have heard in their neighborhood or in their social circle, more people seem to get cancer and brain cancer, and they think they know why. That's why we called Dr. Ed Cragin. He's at the Mayo. He's an oncology professor there. I'm going to pause. We'll get more of your texts and calls in. You can join us now, 312-981-7200. I'll repeat those websites our guest said you could go to for more information. We're not going to get to all of the calls and texts, but we will get to a lot of them in 60 seconds. There's lots of ways to be a good friend. You could watch someone's pet. You could drive them to the airport. You could help them move. You could help them move a body. Here's another thing you can do for a friend. The one that's got knee pain, tell them about the Joint Relief Institute. Have you done this yet? It's in Orland Park in Oakbrook. And people literally come from miles around for pain relief. Digital imaging shows the doctors and technicians where the tissue's compromised, and they put that joint lubricant into the affected spot. And I'm telling you, it works. It's fast, pain-free, non-surgical. And by the way, they've got an insurance expert to make sure you get maximum coverage. The number to call is easy to remember, 708-888-0000. Tell your friends what a good person you are. Now you don't have to pick them up at the airport. You told them about the Joint Relief Institute. Remember, the website is jointreliefinstitute.com or call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. We're visiting with a professor of oncology at the Mayo Clinic. His name is Dr. Edward Cragin. He's an oncology guy at Mayo, and he's done some study, too, on the possibility that cell phones will give you cancer. That story in the Tribune's got us wondering about it, since some of your iPhones are putting out more energy than they're supposed to. Doctor, can I read some more texts for you?
Yes, yes, please.
What about overhead power lines that run within 3 feet of the home?
Wow. I know many of our agricultural colleagues, particularly farmers, have been concerned that the milk production in dairy cows has been compromised by these towers. I must confess ignorance, but I think there is some concern about the legitimacy of those high power wires, which again is very different than what we're talking about with the cell phone.
Understood. Fair enough. 708 said, kids don't hold their cell phones to their ears anymore, John. No one makes calls. And 773 said, my friend was a scientist whose research involved him wearing a cell phone all day. He died of brain cancer. When you hear stories like that, texts like that, what's your reaction, doctor?
There's a sense of sadness. There's a sense of compassion. There's a sense of loss for that patient and his family. But we do not have compelling data that there is a causal relationship between that person's cell phone usage and developing a fatal neoplasm. It's tempting to make that link, but that causal link simply has not been proven based upon credible data from responsible investigators.
My last question.
I might add that Mr. Rowe and his team have done an incredible job dissecting a voluminous amount of conflicting data to make a very convincing argument.
Convincing argument that there is no conclusive evidence.
Yes, and that the appropriate agencies, the FCC, are very much aware of Mr. Rowe's work and are seemingly taking it to the next level. This is not simply being dismissed.
John, please ask your guest if wireless Bluetooth earbuds, like Apple EarPods, pose a cancer risk, because my kids have them in more often than not. And that's the buds always talking to the phone, so what about that, doctor?
I honestly don't know, John. I suspect that there is no protection from the earbuds. I suspect that the jury is still out, and we may be on the air for the next 30 or 40 years and still not have a definitive analysis of the risk, which right now appears to be negligible.
So that's the takeaway, isn't it? You are not yes or no. All you're saying is the current evidence is there's nothing there, but it's early in the game. So parents, I'm going to answer the question for you, but you answer it too. You be your own judge. If you're uncomfortable with it, you're the boss of your kids. Tell them to take the buds out or limit their cell phone use. What do you say, doctor?
I agree. I think I would tell Susie or Jimmy as an adolescent that we do not think you're at risk for brain cancer, but we do think you are at risk for behaviors which are sometimes not really creative with these devices.
Sure, that's parenting, but they go, yeah, but what about cancer, Mom? And I think you can still say, correct, doctor? I don't know, and nobody may know yet, so we're going to be defensive and say limit your use.
Yeah, we're going to say, I love you, I'm concerned, and just be mindful and watchful of the indiscriminate use of the cell phone.
Dr. Edward Cragen is a professor of oncology at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Nice to talk to you, doctor. We sure appreciate your time today.
Thank you. This has been wonderful. Very grateful.
We could leave the Christmas lights up till January. And this is our place. We make the rules. And there's a dazzling haze, a mysterious way about you, dear. Have I known you 20 seconds or 20 years?
Why are you playing Taylor Swift, Ella?
Well, this is the title single off Taylor Swift's new album, Lover, coming out tomorrow. And with much support from her fans, also known as Swifties, Taylor is planning to re-record all her previous albums in order to regain control of her music. That's after Big Machine Records sold it to Scooter Braun, another record executive whom the pop sensation has accused of bullying her.
Yeah, she said this is the worst-case scenario, so I love that, though. It's like, you think you're going to steal my music? I'll redo all of the songs, all control. So does that mean every song she's done, there's going to be two versions of it?
Yeah, she's going to do a new version of each song.
And I wonder if she's going to make it the same, or if she's going to maybe change the way she sings it or the instrumentation or something on the new version, right?
Yeah, maybe they won't be about boyfriends. Okay, but, shouldn't have
done. I suppose it'll be the same songs, but maybe, you know, in a way, she gets to sell her songs twice.
Exactly.
I mean, this is like the Blackhawks or the Cubs coming out with new jerseys all the time, and then everybody's got to go out and get the other Rizzo jersey. She's going to win both ways.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, she has a plenty big fan base.
And if you think, okay, pick what one of her big hits.
Shake It Off.
Okay. So would the new Shake It Off be the exact one, or maybe it's a jazzier version? I don't know. And which one do you like better? It's a reason to buy the same song twice. How clever for her.
Well, it's a lot of work, but I'm sure she's going to have fun with the fact that it's all the same stuff. All she has to do is change it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like she's got to rewrite them or figure out what the chords are. That's already been determined.
She could go back and date the same people. I'm just going to keep going with this.
I know, you will not give up on the fact that you're tired of her theme for her music.
Yeah, like, why can't she write about, she has cats, why can't she write about them? She travels. She's got a great group of friends. Why didn't she write about her appreciation for them?
Whatever it is that people write about, yeah. All right, there's that. Thank you, producer Elif. Taylor Swift in the news today. So let's pause here while we get our guest on. We wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that a lot of you who are teachers or know someone who is, you know that They don't get paid enough to literally staff their classroom, to get supplies. Sometimes they're buying things for the students themselves. And I don't know what this says about the parents of these kids or about the school districts that don't pay the teachers enough. Or, you know, I don't think it's that the teachers want too much. I mean, they're paying out of their own pocket for these things. Anyway, a lady called in when we were talking about it, and she said, well, there's a way around all of that. It's on, she's on line six. Okay, good. She's ready to go. It's Kay McKean from an organization, as I understand it, called Scarce. Hi, Kay. It's John. Welcome back. How are you?
Hi, John. Oh, really? So glad you're calling. Thank you.
Well, you called in when this came up the other day, and you were eating up all of the time for my calls. So I said,
I'm sorry.
I said, Kay, I have to put you on hold, and let's reconnect, and we can just talk more specifically about your organization. What's your background? Are you a teacher?
Nope. My mom said I was born a teacher, but I just can't stand stuff being wasted. So in 1990, we started this little group called Scarce, and in 91, we started the Book Rescue. And schools, libraries, families, stores bring us books they no longer need.
Wow.
And teachers come and choose them, and not-for-profits come.
So you've done it for almost 30 years.
Yes, sir.
And that was before the internet was widespread, so it's probably even easier for people to connect with you now.
Right. It's much easier. It's still hard for people to figure out that we really do have good books. Sometimes I think people think driving to Glen Ellen would be a wild goose chase, but when they get here and they see the textbooks and the value of the storybooks, and they're, you know, there's a lot of languages spoken in Chicagoland area. We have, you know, bilingual books, and it's just amazing what people donate to us and that teachers can have.
So your idea is to collect not just books, but also school supplies, office supplies.
Yes. Yes. And John, people are so great. People are downsizing, like you were saying, when you move back from Minnesota. So people are downsizing and they find they've got a box of construction paper or retired teachers. Oh, they bought construction paper when it was on sale and now they're not teaching. So teachers and families, businesses cleaning out closets and cabinets and shelves, they'll find their business doesn't use that color yellow copy paper anymore or whatever, pens that don't have their website on it and things like that. And so they give us those items and then teachers can come and choose those items for their students.
I remember when Samsung closed an office here. And you can imagine what a big corporation would have to staff a major.
Oh, my goodness.
And we went up there with trucks and gathered all the stuff they were going to give us. And then we just brought it to an individual school. But that was kind of a one-off. I didn't know about your organization. It would have been maybe wiser to give it to you and let you distribute it. But how do you decide who gets the stuff then?
We ask teachers and not-for-profits who are going to come, if they call, and on our website it says, to please bring an ID so that they are, you know, currently a teacher or working with a not-for-profit, just for a little bit of proof, right, that they're working, because we want to help kids. And I don't care what school it goes to, and I don't care what a not-for-profit needs. As long as if they are working for a not-for-profit, we can donate our items to them, and they can help their kids, their families, their clients. We've worked with jails. We work with a great group that gets books for kids who are getting chemotherapy treatment. I know you were just talking about cancer, and we work with the Pediatric Oncology Treasure Chest Foundation. I believe it's in Orland Park. And they send books and little gifts to kids getting chemo in 56 hospitals across America. I don't have a way to do that. So working with that organization, we can partner. And they can get those items to kids across the country. So we're kind of the middleman. Businesses give us things. Families downsizing and decluttering give us rulers and pens and pencils and things. And we have fabulous volunteers. And our team is really, I think my team is extraordinary here. And we get stuff sorted and organized. And teachers come every single day, Jen, and get supplies.
Mm-hmm. So what do they mostly drop off? Describe your store to me. What do you have there?
So we've got sort of a very large garage that we call our warehouse. We need a lot more space, John. We would love to have more space, but people drop off books. So let's say you're cleaning out your parents' house because they're downsizing. So there's books and there's rulers and there's yarn and there's craft things that they, you know, they bought craft supplies and then it got put in a box and put away. So art supplies, you know, those kinds of things. So people bring us a variety of things, and our volunteers and our staff, we sort them, organize them, so all the pencils are together. We check every marker that comes in, John. We don't want teachers choosing markers that are dried up, so we have volunteers who check every single marker. When it's been checked and it's still got ink in it, then it goes into a bin, and teachers can choose all of those that they need. So it's mostly, you know, office supplies and books, and then we are very fortunate to get musical instruments. So this month in August, we've had three schools come and get musical instruments from us, and we were able to help two schools get baby grand pianos for their schools.
Jeez. Somebody gave you a baby grand piano?
Two in August, yes, sir. And we don't have room here, so we match
yeah,
up the family.
Yeah.
We match up the family who has the baby grand with a school that needs it. And then they, the family and the school then works together to get it moved and
right.
so forth. And some of the families are fortunate enough to, they'll actually pay for moving the baby grand and to get it tuned. Some schools, they need to pay for the transportation, but you're still getting a baby grand. So that's kind of fun. But we've had three tubas come in and all kinds of things. We also work with a group that does guitars for veterans. They have over 100 locations across the country. And so when guitars come in here, we have one of our volunteers who plays the guitar, and he can tell whether it's a pretty good guitar, and then we'll contact them, and they come and pick it up. And it's a post-traumatic stress disorder kind of music therapy program, and we've been thrilled to be able to help them get more guitars and guitar picks and guitar strings. So really, anything that is clean, safe, and working that will help a teacher or a not-for-profit, that's what we try to do. One of our biggest challenges is getting books on the shelves fast enough at this time, because when you have 20 to 60 teachers come in every day to get supplies, thousands of books leave every day. So just getting them out of boxes and onto the right shelf so that teachers can find what they need, that's a challenge for us, because it's a lot of books that need to be sorted, and we sort them really well. Teachers have chosen over 7.5 million books from us, John, already.
Really? From your garage?
From our garage, yes, sir.
You don't have multiple locations throughout Chicago?
Oh, I wish. No, we're a wing and a prayer kind of a place, John. I wish we had a bigger place. I wish we had more locations, but we're right here in Glen Ellen, and that's where we've been. Started it in my garage in 1990, and
Is this a residential location. This is a residential area?
No, when I first started in August of 90, and then we're in an office complex here in Glen Ellen on Roosevelt Road, and so we've been in a basement for the first bunch of years, and we have to go down in a basement and pull up books from down a tiny elevator. It was really crazy, but it was sort of a, if you build it, will people really bring you books, and if you build it, will teachers really come, and
well,
yes,
do you
teachers
want,
do come.
In terms of books, do you want textbooks per se, or, you know, classroom books, or what about my nonfiction books and fiction books?
Just any book. We take
stuff.
Any book, paperback, hardcover, text, reference, any book, because we know that if you put books in your recycling bin, they're going to go in the garbage. And so they don't have really book recycling through recycling facilities. So we work with a great company called Environmental Recycling, and they take books that are damaged. Or, you know, the old encyclopedias where Custer was still a good guy. We don't put those we don't put those out on a shelf, right? And then we have some fabulous volunteers, because some of the books we get in here, John, are not for a high school library or anything. They're novels, but they're not those kinds of books. So we have some volunteers that organize the very special books that are autographed or from 1898 and those kinds of things. And so they help us with an antiquarian for really old books and autographed books. And we have a used book sale for books that are not school kids' books, right? And that helps us pay the rent, because our rent is $7,000 a month. And so it's hard to pay the rent, right? So
okay.
We have a little used book and used record sale. But teachers come every single day and they find art supplies and pens and markers and crayons. We just had a company in Addison, Earth Friendly Products. They did a school supply collection for us, and they brought in brand new crayons and markers, and we got those to a program here in Glen Ellyn called the Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center. So we work with back to school fairs. We feel really fortunate that we get to help so many kids have what they need to start off the school year.
This texter says, Scarce is amazing. That's your organization. I taught in an alternative high school with a small budget for 20 years and never had to order techs or science equipment. I got everything from Scarce. John, does Scarce take Christmas cards? Lots of questions and comments here. Let's do this, because some of you want to know how to donate. Some of you want to know how to get it. So where is it, and how do you do that? Let's answer that next. I got a minute or so left with Kay McKean. She's from Scarce. Kay, if I want to give you some stuff, how do I arrange that?
So give us a call or give us an email so we know what you've got, and let's make an appointment for it to come. If it's one or two little boxes of things, that's great. But sometimes people bring whole vans full, and we're not that big. So we kind of make an appointment for people to drop things off. And that's really great, because when people do that, then they come and have a tour and see all that we do, and they really understand us better.
Scarce is a nonprofit that We'll take the school and office supplies you have and get it to other nonprofits and schools. Teachers can go in there and just pick the stuff up for a recommended $5 donation. What's the address of your place?
Our address is 799 Roosevelt Road in Glen Ellyn. It's an odd little intersection. There's a new Panera in our office space, and there's a new CVS pharmacy. But we're on the south side of Roosevelt, and some of those apps on phones, they put us on the north, on the wrong side. But we're in Glen Ellyn on Roosevelt Road and Route 53 and Building 2, and we're here Monday through Friday, and we're here several Saturdays each month. And we just want to reach as many people as we can so kids have a good school year, right?
Amen to that. Okay, and you got a website with information, too?
We do, www.scarce.org, SCARCE.org. And, yep, we are so grateful for donations of good, clean things for our kids, and we are so grateful for teachers who take their own time to come and choose things. And we feel pretty privileged to get to work with the people who are trying to make kids' lives better. We love what we get to do.
This is a Chicago organization doing good. Let's help them out. Okay, Kay McKean, stay in touch. Let us know if we can do anything for you down the road.
Thank you so much, Don. Have a great day.
Scarce.org. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, Studio A.
Yes, that's us, Studio A.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Hello.
John, all right, I know you were just telling the Mandy story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's his dog. Wasn't it his dog?
Oh, okay, but still. Okay, so say it's a dog.
Yeah.
I still want to take credit for that story if I've got it right.
You got some of it right, because I think it's a dog, and I don't think it was Randy. I think it was Mandy.
No, the dog was... No, the song was Mandy.
Right, and I think the dog's name was Mandy, too.
Oh, well, then my story's completely
Although, wrong. Although, I got to just tell you that it would probably, you know, sort of in the same way that Liberace was looking for the right woman his entire career, I think the same can be said of Barry.
Yes.
Is that you don't really want to have him singing about a dude's name. So it could have been Randy. I like that part of the story. That was new to me, and I kind of liked it.
But I don't think I got any of it right, because I have the wrong species, and I said that they changed the name for that reason. You don't think that's true?
I don't know, but I like it, because I can imagine the record executives coming to, Bobby Darling, sweetheart, listen, probably, because that song's from like 1976 or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Some in the mid to late 70s. Bobby Darling, sweetheart, listen, probably not the right thing to do here, you know?
Exactly.
Elton just came out sort of slightly, but he said he was a bisexual. So let's not go there right now. But, you know, it's a funny thing. I was just watching Good Night and Good Luck again,
mm-hmm.
that movie, the George Clooney made movie about Murrow in the 50s and his fight against...
Right.
Edward R.
Edward R. Murrow and his fight against McCarthy and Roy Cohn. And what I find fascinating is there's a moment where he had to cut a deal with CBS that if he was going to go keep doing this, because he was causing so much trouble for CBS, that he was going to have to do these celebrity interviews as well. Which is, I mean, still to this day, right? That's the kind of thing that would happen. And he had to do this interview with Liberace. And Liberace was, just, and Murrow, like, with all seriousness, has to say, so you haven't found the right woman yet, right? And so he's like, and Liberace's like, I'm just trying to find a good mate that I can have, and, you know, I can have a faith and great love in the eyes of God, you know, sort of thing. And you're like, oh, no. And you can tell Murrow was just choking on his Kent cigarette at the time, and it was just all he had to do was get through this thing in order to then try to save the country.
That's funny. I don't know the world story. What's your estimated probability of accuracy of that story?
It's accurate because it's from the movie. It's accurate to the movie. I don't know what the accuracy of the whole thing is.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, thank you for the update on that, Ro.
I don't know. You know what? We probably could both be wrong, but no matter what it is, maybe Barry will call us and get it all straight.
Paul Harvey famously said that. I don't know if he ever said this, but I've said this about Paul Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
He never let the truth get in the way of a really good story.
That's so true.
Yes. So I'm going to stick with my Mandy version.
There you go.